Good morning, everybody. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host. Strangely enough, my name is Jim. Ably assisted by Terry Wilson, engineer par excellence. The Friday show was conceived and implemented by Lisa Smith, and it's produced by Kate Brister. I'm fortunate to have with me in the studio today Cindy Price, a member of the Astoria City Council and a very active member of the KMUN family. Thanks for being here, Cindy.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here. Good morning to you and Terry and Coast Community Radio listeners. I'm not usually here this early in the morning.
Yeah, I know.
More of an afternoon kind of gal.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to just do a kind of a brief biographical sketch. You indicated that everybody knows all that, but I don't. So.
Oh, well, I moved here in 1996. About a week later, I came to the KMUN radio station because my husband was a jazz programmer here at the time, and I really wanted to get right into the community. And so KMUN has been my entree to Astoria and the North Coast and the South Coast of Washington, and I've been here doing something or another ever since and been active in the community in other ways, in the arts community as well. And then last year ran for city council, turned out to run unopposed after starting off with a couple of other candidates, and so I've been on the city council since January.
Wasn't Marco going to run against you?
Marco was... I think his name was in, yes, for a little bit, and Karen Malin, the incumbent, was in for a little while, and but that all sort of went away. And
so, how do you like being on the council?
I love it. It's really terrific. I love policy. I like working on policy. I've got a really interesting group of colleagues to work with. Of course, I've known a lot of those names and sort of known them well enough to say hello for many years, but really getting to know them and what a great staff is there and how easy everyone is to work with. That's really just the best part of it, I think.
Well, we might as well just stick with city stuff for a little while. Excuse me. Wonderful weather here on the North Coast today.
I love November. Don't you like November? I think it's one of the best months because that's when, you know, it's not just that misty stuff that nobody likes. I mean, it just rains, man. I love it.
The only good thing about November is Thanksgiving.
Well, okay.
Well, there's some issues that the council, City of Astoria City Council, is dealing with, and I'd like to get your take on some of them. One that's kind of a hot issue right now is the development of Heritage Square.
Right.
And the ongoing presence of the American Legion on the block there. So could you kind of describe the city's approach to that?
Well, the city has adopted a goal for the 2015-2016 fiscal year of investigating a public-private development on Heritage Square with the library as the ground floor and a housing on top. And so that's ongoing. And last week or the week before, I've forgotten now, there was an all-day charrette at the Lovell Showroom at Fort George where we had a presentation from Walker Macy, a design team from Portland, of three designs for that concept. And people came and gave their opinion. There's also a task force that was put together by the mayor, a group of very interesting people who sort of have a stake in it throughout the community. And they've had a couple of meetings. Their next meeting is November 19th. It's at the library in the flag room. I believe it'll start at 6:30. This is open to the public. And you can hear this group of well-informed people talking about how to combine all the information they got at the Lovell Showroom. One thing that I want to make really, I think, is important to be clear because having talked in the community, I see that there's some lack of clarity about this, is that the city council has not mandated or said in any way that the library must move to Heritage Square and that it must be accompanied by housing. It is very much the preference of the mayor and perhaps other members of the city council. But the mayor, even the mayor, who really would like this to happen, is very interested in public
input. Well, she's a librarian.
Yes, but she's also very interested in what the community wants, and she's not in any way going to push something that the community has said they don't want. So that's what we're doing, investigating. And it's been very interesting. Like many other things that go on in the city, pretty much everyone has a slightly different opinion about it. One overriding opinion that I have gotten from a pretty broad section of people is that they would really like to see at least some, again, very basic design possibilities of the current library before making this decision to move. Mm-hmm. Because while there were some sketches of some sort done by some architectural students a few years ago, there have been no professional concepts, and that seems to be important to do. So,
well, this ongoing dialogue about Heritage Square, does the American Legion contribute to the dialogue?
Well, in the sense that the American Legion has made very clear that it has no interest in moving. It loves its building. It's all decked out for its clubhouse, and the top floor is full of historical memorabilia, and they are simply not interested in doing it. They've been talked to for years. I think probably when you were on the city council, there was even some discussion at that point, and they're just not interested. And they are doing some things to make the building look better. And I think that as Heritage Square continues to develop, they'll probably continue to make their building look good, even better. So, to that extent, that's the American Legion's role in it. They're going to be there, and we're going to have to just build around them.
Yeah, well, the only option, really, what the city wanted to pursue it would be eminent domain.
Yeah, and that has never come up. Never. The other thing about Heritage Square, too, just to stick with the library housing option, is there's been, I think, a misconception that the housing, which would be in the concepts, the designs of the concept that we've seen would be two floors above the library in some configuration, would be affordable housing. And that's not really the case. We're not really sure, A, what affordable is. Affordable is different to everyone, depending on their income. But the general mix, as we've been told about these sorts of library housing concepts, is 80% market rate housing, 20% affordable. And I believe affordable in this definition is 80% of the median income of an area. The median income of Astoria is about $33,000. So 80% of that, and then 30% of that 80%, if you get my drift.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in the concepts, in the designs that we saw of the concept, I believe the design that gave the largest square footage to housing would provide maybe 5 to 6 one-bedroom affordable apartments in that design.
Hmm.
So,
well, another issue that you guys are dealing with is the transmission tower up at the column. There's a proposal to move that over to Shively Hall. There's a hill there that worked pretty good. And, you know, Terry Wilson, our engineer here, is a radio guy, so feel free to enter in this discussion, Terry. But my understanding is that the Friends of the Column, Jordan Snitzer and that bunch, are interested in doing some improvements at the column, but they would like to see that transmission tower moved. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's been quite a long process, and is really very much in the works. The city has passed made a number of motions about this and is given the okay to do it. And what would happen is that the Verizon wanted to put a very tall lattice type pole, mm-hmm, there. That would be quite high, at least 150 feet, I think, and the Friends were very concerned that that would have a negative impact on the column and the site up there. So for several years, they hired a consulting team to go and look for sites. So the at this point, the large lattice pole would, mm-hmm, go out past the reservoir, out past pipeline, way past there down. Nobody would see it unless, I'm sure if you're on the river, you might be able to see it up above something. But it would not provide them with good coverage for, particularly for the south side of Astoria. So they needed another site closer into Astoria. They looked around. They tried this, that, and the other. However, they tried these things, Terry. You would know better than I.
Now, this is for cell phone?
This is for cell phone. This is for communications and also for police and fire communications as well would be co-located on the one out out in the forest past the reservoir. Then Verizon needed additional coverage, so they looked around for other sites. And the site that seemed to be the best and the least obtrusive is in Shively Park, at the way back of it, and down a little bit from the walkway. The city council has approved all of this. There would be no city communications on the one in Shively Park, but they could be in the future if the city needed it. So that's what's happening now. We have this has gone through Historic Landmarks Commission and the Planning Commission and come to the City Council. And now we have an appeal. It was going to be on this Monday's agenda, but the appellant asked for additional time, and so it is currently scheduled for the December 21st agenda.
Now, if this change is made, Cindy, what would be the cost to the city?
The city paid about $100,000 to the consultant Converge something, which is the team that went around and did the siting analyses.
Terry, from your perspective, where would you like to see that transmission tower?
Wherever the consultant says it should be.
Well, yeah.
Being diplomatic.
Bucks, so. Yes. So we'll see what happens. The appeal, there was a piece in the paper about it, so that's how I know more about the appeal than I would. It's not like I have any information that's come from the city. I think this is all public commission. The appeal is that there's one appeal to the Historic Landmarks Commission that the pole, the monopole that would be in Shively Park, isn't compatible with the design and nature of a historic park. And then there are two appeals relating to the Planning Commission's variances, the height variance from 45 to 150 feet, and that the pole is not compatible with the development code section that governs wireless. All I've seen is the piece in the paper, so that's all I can say about it at the moment.
Well, it sounds to me like no matter what happens, the transmission towers will be removed from the column site.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Another thing that the city's been kind of poking around at for several years is the idea of generating power from the dam up at the headworks.
Yeah.
And I know that there was a pilot project that went into effect up there, and I wondered if you could tell us how that's going along.
As far as I know, it's going along just fine. And we went up there, a few months ago. And hydroelectric power from the dam makes all kinds of sense. It is a pilot project. I don't know of any other projects in the works for that at this point. You should have Ken Cook on here sometime. Boy, he's the guy who really has got a lot to talk about, really interesting things that go on with the infrastructure of the city.
Yeah, I know Ken.
Yeah.
So, are you texting somebody now?
No, I was looking at the time because I wanted to make sure that we had time to talk about the ferry.
Yeah, we're just about to our midpoint break, and I was going to do that, and then we'll talk about the proposed ferry.
Okay.
What other critical issues is the council dealing with right at this time?
Let me say that, the mayor and Councilor Herzing and I, we have regular constituent meetings, and I had one. It was sparsely attended last week, but the big issue, and it had come up at the council as well, was sidewalks. And concrete work is so expensive. Why is concrete work so expensive? Is gravel expensive?
Yes, that's part of the problem. And the cement is... it doesn't come from around here. It comes from Eastern Oregon, so it has to be mined, processed and then trucked over here,
mm-hmm.
where it goes into the ready-mix plant, and they make concrete out of it. It's an expensive process. And a cubic yard, you know, is 3 by 3 by 3.
Yeah.
It's about $100.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's expensive.
Well, so I'm not sure how we're going to address that, but it's on Ken Cook's agenda and on the city's too, particularly since the Irving Street Bridge has reopened,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, a beautiful wide bridge. You could go 70 miles an hour from 16th probably to 35th with that bridge open, and so there's a little concern about that. And it has great sidewalks on it now on both sides. And then at one point on one end, it kind of stops. And there are plenty of places on Irving where there just are no sidewalks. And it is a thoroughfare for Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are concerned about that. Plenty of people who don't live on Irving walk on Irving because it's a great long flat spot in Astoria. And another spot that's of interest to people is 33rd down to the Safeway stop
mm-hmm.
sign, because it's steep there, and there are some wheelchair users in that area, and they have a lot of time negotiating it. So sidewalks have become a real interesting issue in the city. The other thing that the city is doing is, you know, the Parks Master Plan is in train. Ian Sisson, this tremendous, rare volunteer that we have now, is working on that, and that'll be about 9 months of work.
Well, let me just remind our listeners, Cindy, excuse me, that
sure.
That it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and we're talking with Cindy Price, a member of the Astoria City Council. And thanks for being here, Cindy. So tell me a little bit more about this Parks Master Plan.
Well, how many parks do you think the city now, how many parks do you think the city maintains?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
A lot.
19.
67.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, some of them are really small, but they all have to be maintained eventually.
Yeah.
And park staff is nowhere near 67. So maintenance has become a real issue. And interesting, it's interesting that people seem to be more interested in, or not more interested, people seem to be interested in keeping things even more well-maintained than they have been in the past. People really want Astoria to look great.
Mm-hmm.
It places a lot of demands on a small staff. So that was one reason to go through the Parks Master Plan, to really see what we have, who's using what, how often. Are there things that we could privatize? What can we do to release some of the burden on parks while maintaining a tremendous park structure? There's also the recreation structure and the arc and the little sprouts and all sorts of things that they do. So Ian Sisson is a RARE volunteer. RARE is Resource Assistance for Rural Environments. It's a part of the AmeriCorps. They're like the cream of the AmeriCorps crop.
Yeah.
And our current community development director, Kevin Cronin, was one. And so they really are very civic-minded people. Kevin, Ian Sissons came. He's had a couple of community input sessions with really great layout. You could have, you know, usually somebody will give you a penny for your thoughts. They gave you 10 pennies for your thoughts and all these jars, so you could place a penny in which jar was most important to you, along with a number of other things. So this is going to be about a 9-month process. There'll be several more community input sessions as we go along, one in early spring and one in late spring or early summer. And then we'll wind up with a really great report, and hopefully we can make some decisions about how to better maintain our Parks and Recreations Department without overburdening the staff.
Yeah, and that money comes out of the general fund?
Sure.
Yeah, without overburdening the general fund.
Yeah.
You know, one of the really exciting things that's come up here just recently, Cindy, I know you're involved directly in the acquisition of the ferry boat.
Yes.
That's now up in Bremerton. I'm trying to think of the name of that boat.
It's the Kirkland right now.
The Kirkland, yeah.
Although I did just read, and I hadn't heard this, but I did just read when I was looking up some history, that Mr. Lent, Christian Lent, who's the current owner, had it legally renamed Tourist Number 2 this summer after he started negotiating with a group down here, with Robert Jacob from Cannery Pier Hotel and a group down here to bring her home.
Yeah. Well, we had a meeting that actually I went to. Cindy kind of ran the meeting a few nights ago, speaking to the idea of trying to get this ferry back down here, because this is where it came from. And it ran here until the Astoria Bridge was completed.
1963, I think it was.
1963,
like 66. Yeah. Actually, 66. Next year will be the 50th anniversary of the opening of the bridge and of the last ferry run.
Okay.
So it is really, I get goosebumps just saying that. It's really tremendous timing to bring the Tourist Number 2 home.
Well, I rode that ferry many, many times when I was growing up in Long Beach.
Yeah, and a lot of people did.
What I remember about it was the marvelous cheeseburgers they made in the galley.
You know, burgers have come up, having burgers on the boat.
Well, talk a little bit about the organization that you've kind of started to form and it's coming into place to acquire this thing and deal with it. I mean, this is a big deal.
It is a big deal, and it's going to require a slew of a crew of volunteers to help. Jim, you know a lot about this. I think that the trolley, getting the trolley here and up and running has been, we've really been talking a lot about that in terms of getting the ferry boat here, that there are some people, actually there's been just really a lot of excitement about the ferry, but there have been some naysayers, and as there were with the trolley. So we're going to need a lot of help. I want to just say right off, and then I'll say it again, we have a website, astoriaferry.com. Please, if you're interested, go. If you're interested in any way in volunteering, if you have expertise, if you have stories to tell about having been on the Tourist Number 2, if you have any memorabilia, please go to astoriaferry.com, and you can see our email address and write us. There's also a very lovely golden PayPal button. You can donate to the ferry because it will take some money. And you can also, just on the organization, we have a four-member board right now that is myself and Dulcie Taylor, who's president of the Downtown Association, Dorothy Lucula, whose father was an engineer on the ferries, and Tom Brownson, who's a local general contractor and a sailor. He's owned a boat for many, many years, and he's the vice commodore of the yacht club. And we're looking to expand the board to seven, and I think, Jim, you showed some interest, so we'll be talking about that in the next couple of days. The Astoria Downtown Historic District Association is a 501c3 nonprofit, and they've very generously agreed to a memorandum of understanding with the Astoria Ferry Board so that the ferry can accept tax deductible contributions through that affiliation. So that's really terrific. Again, all on astoriaferry.com. There's also an address there. It's P.O. Box 261, Astoria, if you just want to send us a check.
Well, to me, it kind of looks like a two-stage process. The first, before a lot of this stuff can happen, we have to actually own the ferry.
Well, that's true.
The sale price is $125,000.
$125,000. And what currently, we are waiting for a space to open at a shipyard on Lake Union in Seattle so that the ferry can be taken from from the Bremerton Marina to the shipyard, be hauled out. It has to be inspected by the Coast Guard. Its last inspection was in 2012, so it hasn't been that long. Boats that are moored in freshwaters, as apparently it was considered there, only have to be hauled out every 5 years. So we expect it to be in pretty good shape. We've seen pictures. People have gone and crawled through it, and it looks really good to people, but we'll see. If the underwater repairs are considered acceptable, then we'll go ahead and have them made right away, run the boat down to Astoria and moor it for the rest of the fall and winter if we can get two or three good clear sailing days. And have it down here. The Mr. Lent has been very generous in allowing us not to pay for the boat until it is hauled out and we see what the extent of the repairs are and we can make a rational decision about whether it is a worthwhile thing to do. And so at that point, then we will want to really ratchet up the fundraising. But it does cost money to haul it out and have it inspected. It's going to be about maybe $15,000, and we have some generous donors who have given money for that. So we're ready to go. We really need to be ready to go on a dime because we don't know when this is going to open, and we have to just be ready to go then. So then it would come down here. We've had people who work on historic preservation for houses who are very interested in working on historic preservation of a boat.
Yeah.
Where would it be docked is going to be your next question, I'm sure. And why not at the place where it always used to live, at the 14th Street Landing right down here at the bottom of the hill? I think it'll be beautiful.
That's used by tugboats now, isn't it?
Well, I've only seen one tug in there in all the years that I've been there. I think one does come in maybe occasionally. It's very rare. So it's not really used, but it could be. It would need some upgrades, so we'd need, you know, some permissions and some donations for that. What would we do with the ferry when it gets here? Well, we think it's in very good running condition. In good weather, it would be used for excursions up and down the river from, say, the port to Tongue Point. We had some great brainstorming ideas at the meeting that we had earlier this week of having it as a water taxi. It could stop at the Mertz Center. Mm-hmm. It could stop at Pier 39, at the 14th Street Landing, at the cruise ship docks, and then back. And in inclement weather or in the winters and spring and late fall, it could be used as an events space.
And it'll hold somewhere around 150 people?
Yep, around 150 people. I mean, we think even just sitting at the dock, it'll just be a marvelous piece of our history. We, Astorians in particular, are wonderful at historic preservation of our on land stuff. We haven't really gotten too far with our water, being able to get out on our waters. Floyd Holcomb has done a lovely job with Pier 39, and I think we all love that. And so here's an opportunity to preserve a piece of our maritime history.
Well, once we get the thing and it's paid for and it's here, what other kind of activities can we expect to do with this thing?
Well, again, I think that we have the excursions. You can charter it for excursions. We can run it as a water taxi. We're brainstorming. Send us your ideas. We'd love to hear more. I think there will be people who will want to rent it out to have their events there.
Wedding receptions.
It's not it's not a car ferry anymore. A number of years ago, it was changed. It has beautiful 12-foot glass windows on both sides. It is enclosed. It's a beautiful space. It has 4 or 5 beer pools. So it's ready to go.
Now, the photos, can they be seen on the website?
They are, astoriaferry.com.
Yeah. Well, if people are interested, that'd be a good way for them to see it before it actually gets here.
Yeah.
But once the thing's in town, that's when the action will really start.
That's right. And we're going to have a big, big, big hurrah when it comes into town. Everyone will know about it. We'll make it really, really obvious. And we hope to be able to dock it at the 17th Street dock for a week or two at least so that people can get a really good idea of what it is and go on for free and look around and get excited and see how they might help to preserve and operate and maintain this wonderful, wonderful piece of history.
Well, that's really an exciting project. I'm kind of glad I went to that meeting.
I'm so glad you went too.
It's fun to be there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Cindy, we are running out of time here at Friday at Coast Community Radio.
Can I just say one other thing? Please, constituents or anyone who wants to contact me, CindyPriceAstoria.com, all contact. I put a lot of information up. Also have a Facebook page, Cindy Price, Astoria City Councilor. Love to hear from constituents throughout Astoria.
Great.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I urge our listeners to stick around for a little news break, and then Albert Smith and as always, wonderful Friday folk show.
Yeah.
So until next week, when we'll be visiting with Pat Corcoran, goodbye and thank you.